Tonight I want to talk with you about your life story. And don't get nervous, I'm not going to pick on anybody in particular. There used to be a TV show, This Is Your Life, years ago. And the book of Hebrews chapter 11, certainly tells us that we leave behind a story. The reading that was read for us tonight, Hebrews chapter 11, mentions several different people by name. If you read on here in chapter 11, starting in verse 14, it says, "For those who say such things make it clear that they are seeking a country of their own, and indeed they had been thinking of that country from which they went out, they would have had the opportunity to return. But as it is, they desire a better country, that is, a heavenly one. Therefore, God is not ashamed to be called their God, for He has prepared a city for them." What a wonderful thing for it to be said about you, that God is not ashamed to be called your God. And, of course, Abraham and Noah and all the others that were mentioned live lives of faith so that could be said about them. And their names are recorded there in the book of Hebrews. Unfortunately, everybody doesn't have the same kind of things written about them. There are many others who were not mentioned in the book of Hebrews, you know, for obvious reasons. And, sometimes if you're in a place of business, you see these team-building posters that talk about teamwork and things, and it's made by a company, I think it's called Motivation, but there's a company that kind of opposite that called Demotivators, and they do spoofs on those posters. And there's one that I remember seeing. It said, "It may be that your only purpose in life is to serve as a warning for others," and it's a picture of a lighthouse. And so, well, that's a little bit sarcastic, but when you look at some of the people that we see in the Bible, like Jezebel and Ahab and Ananias and Sapphira and others, you know, they have been, we remember their names too, but they've kind of been set up as a warning for us. And so when we hear their names, we think about that warning. So it begs the question, how is it that we will be remembered? Will we be remembered as those in Hebrews chapter 11? It says that they came, he obtained witness that he was righteous, or Abel rather, that he obtained witness that he was righteous, and through it he being dead still speaks. And Enoch, it says that he had this testimony that he pleased God. Noah, being divinely warned of things not yet seen, he was moved with godly fear, and he prepared the ark for the saving of his household by which he condemned the world. Abraham is another one that's mentioned, that he obeyed when he was called to go to the place that he would receive as an inheritance, not knowing where he was going. And he, by faith, dwelled in the land of promise. He waited for that city which has foundations. And the Hebrew writer goes on to say that these died in faith. They sought a homeland. They deserved and desired a better country, that is, a heavenly country. Reading on, we read more about Abraham. Verse 17 of Hebrews chapter 11, "By faith Abraham, when he was tested, offered up Isaac, and he received the promise, offered up his only begotten son, of whom it was said, 'In Isaac your seed shall be called,' concluding that God was able to raise him up even from the dead, from which he also received from him in a figurative sense." So Abraham did what was probably one of the hardest tests of his life, and that was to go offer up his son, which he prepared to do because he trusted God would even be able to raise up Isaac from the dead. Joseph was another one. And Moses, choosing rather to suffer affliction with the people of God than to enjoy the passing pleasures of sin. He is also said to have been looking to the reward, and he forsook Egypt, not fearing the wrath of the king. Also, moving on, in verse 32, it says, "What more shall I say? For time would fail me to tell of Gideon and Barak and Samson and Jephthah, also of David and Samuel and the prophets, who through faith subdued kingdoms, worked righteousness, obtained promises, stopped the mouths of lions, quenched the violence of fire, escaped the edge of the sword, out of weakness were made strong, became valiant in battle, turned to fight the armies of the aliens. Women received their dead raised to life again. Others were tortured, not accepting deliverance that they might obtain a better resurrection. Still others had trials of mocking and scourging, yes, and chains and imprisonment. They were stoned, they were sawed in two, they were tempted, slain with a sword. They wandered about in sheepskins and goatskins, being destitute, afflicted, tormented, of whom the world was not worthy. Now, these serve as good examples for us. And so, this is one of the great passages that we can be encouraged by when we read about what other people went through and they still remain faithful to God. But the question for us tonight is how will these people be remembered? Because their story has already been written. But how will I be remembered and how will you be remembered? Everyone that has lived before us leaves a legacy or some kind of story behind. But in the end, how will that story read? One writer said, "Will you leave people trying to unravel your life to determine who you really were and what you were really all about? But make no mistake about it, you have a life story, just as your father and your grandfather before you." So, some people leave behind stories that are contradictory and conflicting and confusing. Along this line, I think about Solomon. Because Solomon, there's a lot written about him, and certainly there's a lot of wisdom literature that was penned by him after he had made a lot of mistakes. And he certainly had the resources to try many different things in his search for happiness. But you think about Solomon, here is a man who started the race so strong in his life. He was one that made a very wise decision in choosing to have wisdom from God. In 1 Kings chapter 3, verses 9 through 13, Solomon asked this of God. And so his reign really starts out very well in context of what it is that he would like to do. He says, "Therefore, give to your servant an understanding heart to judge your people, that I may discern between good and evil. For who is able to judge this great people of yours?" The speech pleased the Lord that Solomon had asked this thing. Then God said to him, "Because you have asked this thing, and have not asked for long life for yourself, nor have asked riches for yourself, nor have asked the life of your enemies, but have asked for yourself understanding to discern justice, behold, I have done according to your word. See, I have given you a wise and understanding heart, so that there has not been anyone like you before you, nor shall any like you arise after you. I have also given you what you have not asked, both riches and honor, so that there shall not be anyone like you among the kings all your days." So this is a great thing that Solomon asked for. He asked for wisdom, and God blessed him with the wisdom and many other things as well. Most people in his position would have asked for three more wishes, I guess. But he didn't do that. But the sad thing is Solomon started out very well, but he didn't end the race quite as well as it started. In 1 Kings chapter 11 and verse 4, it says, "For it was so when Solomon was old that his wives turned his heart after other gods, and his heart was not loyal to the Lord his God, as was the heart of his father David." And so, in many ways, Solomon is remembered for his wisdom, but he is also remembered for his unfaithfulness, and certainly the way that his heart was turned aside by his wives. And as a result, Solomon became a warning to future generations, as we see in Nehemiah chapter 13. The prophet Nehemiah, in verse 26 of Nehemiah 13, says, "Did not Solomon, king of Israel, sin by these things? Yet among many nations there was no king like him, who is beloved of his God, and God made him king over all Israel. Nevertheless, pagan women caused him even to sin." And so Solomon is remembered for his wisdom, but you see what else Nehemiah remembers him for? The pagan women that caused him to sin. And so, such stories sometimes can cause people to stumble and to become discouraged. And, in our lives, we may see that there's somebody that we had a great deal of respect for. May not be Solomon, maybe somebody else in our life where it's been a preacher or elder or somebody has been influential in our lives, somebody that's very involved or maybe taught us the Scripture, and then they fall away. And sometimes people say, well, if they can't remain faithful, you know, what hope is there for me? What chance do I have if this person I had so much respect for has fallen away? There are stories like this. There are other tragic stories that we see throughout the Scriptures, but it should not cause us to become unfaithful or discouraged. But it does bring to our minds how much influence we may have on others. That while there's certainly, you know, collateral damage to our own spiritual life when we fall away, we also may have a negative effect on others. Judas and Demas are ones that come to mind also. In Acts chapter 1, verses 17 and 18, it says, "For he was numbered with us and obtained part in this ministry." That's talking about Judas. "And now this man purchased a field of the wages of iniquity, and falling headlong, he burst open in the field, and all his entrails gushed out." Talking about the death of Judas. And it's significant that he's described as one that he was numbered among us and obtained a part in the ministry. Of course, we remember Judas for what he was, and he was a traitor. Colossians chapter 4 and verse 14, it says here that Luke, the beloved physician, and Demas greet you. But we also read about Demas in another place. So Demas here is introduced to the Colossian brethren, and he's greeting those brethren. So he's in a good standing at that point. But 2 Timothy chapter 4 and verse 10, Paul writes later, "Demas has forsaken me." So Demas is no longer in the greeting other Christians role. He's in the role of, he has become an example of what not to do. And unfortunately, this time when Paul mentions this person by name, it's not in a complimentary way. He says that Demas has forsaken me, having loved the present world, and has departed for Thessalonica. Crescens for Galatia, Titus for Dalmatia. So, don't know details about what Demas did in forsaking him, but Paul said he loves this present world, and he has departed. So, great opportunities here, but misused. Judas is one who had great opportunities, just like the other disciples, but as we've noted before, his love for money was a big problem in his life. He had the opportunity and the privilege of sitting at the feet of Jesus and could have learned as the other disciples did and became, you know, messengers of the gospel after Jesus was ascended. But he didn't do that. I don't know what he was thinking about when he was listening to Jesus. Apparently he was thinking about the money that could be made off of the situation. And he did not have a spiritual mind. And rather had a carnal mind, which was his undoing and caused him to be a bad example for us. Sometimes people have hidden stories in their life. One writer said, "Identify any current aspect of your life which is hidden or secret and which you would regret others finding out about after your death. What you must do about it is that you need to do something about it immediately to be living honorably, openly, and sincerely. Commit now to doing what you know you need to do." And, you know, that's kind of a heavy statement for a lot of people, because many people have become very adept at hiding things from others and keeping things from being known. But Matthew chapter 23 and verse 25, Jesus says, "Woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, for you cleanse the outside of the cup and dish, but inside they are full of extortion and self-indulgence." Jesus also says in another place that they are like empty sepulchres that look good on the outside, but inside are full of dead men's bones. Reminds me of what I may have told you before. When I was in college and went away for a few weeks during the summer, I thought I would save power by turning off the electricity in the apartment. And I forgot the things in the refrigerator like to stay cold. And when I got back, the refrigerator looked really shiny on the outside, but inside it was full of dead men's bones. It was not pretty. But, you know, I could have just cleaned up the outside and not paid attention to what was on the inside. And that's what Jesus says that we have to avoid in our life, is getting real pretty on the outside, but on the inside, you're full of mold and mildew and dead men's bones. So Jesus says what's on the inside is important. If what is on the inside is good, the outside's going to take care of itself. Paul gives a similar warning in 1 Timothy chapter 5. 1 Timothy chapter 5, verses 24 and 25. He says here that secret things eventually do rise to the surface. The sin of some men are quite evident, going before them to judgment. For others, their sins follow after. Likewise, also, deeds that are good are quite evident, and those which are otherwise cannot be concealed. In other words, what Paul is saying, that you are going to reap what you sow, and it may not be real apparent to many people in the beginning that you're the type of person that is sowing destruction for yourself, and you're going to reap that. But things that are concealed are not going to be concealed forever, because God knows all, even if we're able to keep things a secret from others. In Deuteronomy chapter 28 and verse 15, it says, "It shall come to pass, if you do not obey the voice of the Lord your God, to observe all His commandments and statutes which I command you today, all these curses will come upon you and overtake you." Again, what you see here is that God is saying, if you don't obey my voice, it doesn't say I'm going to strike you down immediately, but it's going to come to pass at some time that there is going to be punishment to pay for these things. Numbers chapter 32, verse 23 says, "But if you do not do so, then take note you have sinned against the Lord, and be sure your sin will find you out." You know, Achan found that out when he took of the accursed things, as we've talked about in our Sunday morning class. He took of those things, hid them in his tent, and eventually it was something that was found out by everyone and cost him his life. So the thing is that there are those that are obvious sinners. And we see that in the world today, whose sins are clearly leading up to their disaster and that they're going to be punished. But then there are those who are secret sinners who stand with this outward skin that looks fine. But inwardly, you know, they're living a life of evil and ugliness. But what we need to understand is God can see that. In the media, we're often exposed to somebody's unauthorized biography. I think, not to focus on Donald Trump so much, but I think I remember this week also that there was an unauthorized biography that was released about him, and he didn't like it. Well, you know, what does unauthorized mean? It means that the person that is being written about didn't have any hand in editing what it was that was being said. And anytime there's an unauthorized biography, just depending on the nature of the person, a lot of times they don't like what is said in many instances, because it may show things about them that they really don't care for. You know, autobiography might be much more complimentary when we write about ourselves. So, the unauthorized biography, whether people like it or not, may talk about things that are real, things that are not, so upstanding. But the point is, if you're famous enough to have a biography written about you, if people are talking about you, either in a negative way or a positive way. And as far as all of us are concerned, we need to realize that people notice us and they talk about us. And what are they going to say about us? Have you ever been to a funeral and thought as you were going there, I wonder what the person that's preaching the funeral is going to say about him or her? As you're thinking, you know the way that they live. And what are they going to find to say? Is it going to be a case where this person is going to serve as an example of what not to do. It's very uncomfortable for a person that has been asked to preach that kind of funeral for one that they know from the way that they live that they didn't live a life pleasing to God. And I know my father, when he was called upon to do that, he said that any funeral that he preached, he's preaching to the living and not the dead. And you have to use that opportunity to preach the gospel and try to serve as a warning. And people can read between the lines without you saying too many negative things about the deceased. But if you preach the gospel, people can put two and two together that you need to be prepared. But what a horrible thing to have passed on. And then it's very hard for somebody to come up with something that's flattering or encouraging, and really it'd be hard to do that. Just recently I was asked to write a recommendation for a former co-worker. They wanted me to write something nice about him on LinkedIn. I haven't done it yet because I'm trying to think, what is it that I can say? Because I can't say, well, he really lost his temper a lot. And because that's the first thing that I think about when I think of this person. And, this person is very regimented, and whenever something, gets off schedule or there's an interruption to what the normal workload is, he just comes unglued. All the things that I think about when I think of this person is not something that I would want to write in a recommendation. And so I'm trying to think about, some positive things. And he does have some positive things, but those are the things that really kind of stood out to me. And so, what kind of reputation do we have spiritually? Do we really want our name mentioned in a future sense with a statement like, well, they really did have a temper, and that is the most significant thing or the first thing that pops into somebody's mind when they think of your name? And what is it that people think first about you? And we may not know. We might want to ask from time to time if we have somebody that we can confide in, and somebody that if they tell you the truth, you won't haul off and punch them. But we need to know what kind of reputation we have, and we need to strive to have a good reputation. It all comes down to finishing strong. One of the encouraging things and great things that we see in the life of Paul is that, number one, he was totally dedicated to what he was doing. And he was always that way, even when he was doing what was wrong, because in all good conscience, he was out there fighting against Christianity. But he did that with all of his might. But when he learned the truth, after Jesus appeared to him and became the great apostle that he was, he kept working and he didn't let things stand in his way. And he didn't get discouraged. 2 Timothy chapter 4, verse 7, he says, I have fought the good fight. I have finished the course. I have kept the faith. It's not enough just to start the life of a Christian. We've seen that too many times, where somebody starts and they don't finish. Just a few weeks ago at camp, there was one of the races, I guess it was a 100-yard dash, and one of the people in one of the society, they fell down as soon as they started. And they laid on the ground and they stayed there the whole race. On the ground, face down. And I thought, I know you're not going to win, but you need to go up, you need to get up and go ahead and finish. I mean, that's embarrassing. That you slipped and you fell, but you just stayed there. A Christian is going to have failure in their life. They're going to have times that they fall down. But they can't stay there. They cannot stay face down. They need to get up and they need to keep running. And Paul uses a lot of athletic metaphors when he gives his lessons. And he talks about running the race. And he talks about finishing the course. And he's not saying that you have to get there faster than somebody else. He just wants you to finish. It's not a competition. We're all in the same race, and we all want to get to the finish line. He has kept the faith. He's finished the course. He's fought the good fight. And there are numerous warnings in the New Testament about how important it is to have this diligence. In 1 Corinthians chapter 10 and verse 12, we're told to take heed that you do not fall. Ephesians chapter 5, verse 15 says, be careful how you walk. Also, we're told, let us fear if, while a promise remains of entering His rest, any one of you may seem to have come short of it. Hebrews chapter 4 and verse 1. And I mention those verses to you because there's many in the religious world today that say, once you have started the race, you are going to finish no matter what. Because God is going to make you win. It doesn't matter if you fall down. It doesn't matter if you veer off course. Because God's already declared you a winner. But I ask you, why are we told, take heed lest you fall, be careful how you walk, fear if promise remains of entering His rest that any of you have come short of it? Why would we be warned of coming short of it if it's not possible to come short of it? The Hebrew writer is talking to those who are Christians, who have named the name of Christ, who have been buried in baptism. Finishing strong is about starting and continuing and finishing, and we have to be dedicated to that. Sometimes people have a tendency to become a little soft in their thinking and not try as hard as they ought to. And we need to be aware of that and not give in or veer from side to side. In fact, the Galatian brethren are warned about that very thing. Galatians chapter 1, verse 6 says, I marvel that you are turning away so soon from Him who called you in the grace of Christ to a different gospel, which is not another, but there are some who trouble you and want to pervert the gospel of Christ. But even if we or an angel from heaven preach any other gospel to you than what we have preached to you, let him be accursed. As we have said before, so now I say again, if anyone preaches any other gospel to you than what you have received, let him be accursed. Again, here's an example of those that started but got off course. And Paul says, I'm really amazed that you've gotten off course so quickly, that you've let other things come into your heart, that you've let others lead you astray. So we need to finish strong. I want to ask you also, will I be a blessing for future generations? Proverbs chapter 10, verse 7 says, the memory of the righteous is blessed, but the name of the wicked will rot. Yeah, there's two different choices there. Which do you want to be? Do you want to be associated with rottenness, or do you want to be associated with righteousness and being blessed? And no doubt we know which one we want to choose. God remembers the righteous. And, you know, from time to time we mention those that used to be members of this congregation that have passed on. And shots come to mind. Tommy and TJ Ingram come to my mind often. And sometimes when I'm looking through my computer and looking at my old files, I come across, you know, the lessons I did at their funerals and think about, you know, the type of person, people that they were and the kind of examples they were. Isn't it much nicer to think about those things and to think about where they are now and to think about the good examples that they were? Proverbs 10 says that the memories of the righteous are blessed. Do we want that kind of name for ourselves? The names of the wicked will disappear, or they'll leave a bad memory. Some wicked people have become popular in the secular media, and the world continues to judge them. People like Adolf Hitler, you know, there's names that just go down in history of being wicked. And there are the names of countless others that were godly and righteous that we can remember in a good way. Because they had a clear commitment to God in their life. They had a clear commitment to the brethren. They had a clear commitment to their family. and to their friends and to their neighbors. So, you know, what are some practical questions that we can ask ourselves? How will my children remember me? I know I refer to my father a lot when I'm giving lessons because, you know, corny jokes and illustrations and things that he used always pop into my head. I lived with him for a long time and had a lot of contact with him for a long time and heard some of the same sermons over and over, you know, for a long time. So is there any doubt, you know, if you spend much time around me, how I feel about my father? How do his children remember him? Will they have nagging questions about whether or not I love them? I have no nagging questions about my dad, whether or not he loved me, because of the type of man he was. Do I wonder if I made him proud, if he was proud of things that I did? Yeah, he told me a lot of things that I remember. But think about this in the opposite way. What if that wasn't true? What if I had to remember my father and couldn't remember good things? And have to wonder, did he love me? He never told me he loved me. Was he proud of me? I don't know. I think he was. Will your children remember that you were active in their lives and that you were kind and compassionate and affectionate and reasonable? Will they remember that you're a godly person, or will they remember that you're inconsistent or hypocritical? Will our memory encourage people during difficult times? Or will our memory only add to their further exasperation? Colossians chapter 3, verse 21 says, "Fathers, do not provoke your children lest they become discouraged." So it's possible sometimes that could happen. Or how will my spouse remember me? Are we living in a way that our spouse would marry us again if they were given another chance, if they could go back in time? So how will your friends and brethren remember you? Joshua chapter 24, verse 15. It says, "If it seems evil to you to serve the Lord, choose for yourself this day whom you will serve, whether the gods which your fathers served that were on the other side of the river, or the gods of the Amorites in the land where, in whose land you dwell. But as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord." We've been talking about Joshua a good bit on Sunday morning. How is he remembered? He's remembered in a way that people want to name their children Joshua. He's remembered probably more for this phrase than anything else that he ever said. "As for me and my house, I will serve the Lord." And it is a great way to be remembered, because he was one that did serve the Lord. So when we think about our life, you know, the best thing about our life is that it hasn't been fully written yet. So if there's things about it that you don't like, you've still got time to change it. If there's anything that we discussed tonight that kind of leaves you a little bit shaky, you're thinking, you know, I need to change that. I need to tell somebody something. I need to stop living hypocritically. I need to stop living a life of secret sin and really come clean with God. There's time to do that, because God has blessed you with that time. But it's also critical that you do it. It's critical that you make those changes. You know, sometimes we can't really help the way that we're remembered by brother, sister, or you know, somebody on this earth. Maybe there's been damage done. Maybe there's things that have been said. Maybe that person that you had some influence over, you've been separated from, or they've already passed on. You can't do anything about that. But the most important thing is what your reputation is with God. And what you see in Hebrews chapter 11, for all those who are not perfect, just as none of us are, but to live lives of righteousness that God inspired the Hebrew writer to say, I want to point out Noah, I want to point out Abraham, I want to point out Moses, I want to point out Tom, I want to point out Gary, I want to point out Rex and Ethan, because they're examples of what somebody should do, and they can be an encouragement to others. See, our names will never be written in Hebrews unless you go and write it in yourself. But you can be one that should be there, and you can be with those who are written about in eternity if you will live the same way that they did. And that would be a great thing. It would be a great thing to be in the family of God for eternity. But it only comes from a life of total commitment. The side benefit is that you know that you can be a comfort to others, and you can be an influence on those that come after you. But the primary thing is that you want to be known by God and be one of His children and be with Him in eternity. We can help you in any way to do that. Be obedient to the gospel of Christ. We invite you to come while we stand together and sing.